program is brought to you by P. Murphy & Associates, successfully providing IT professionals to Southern California businesses.
Hi, this is Marlene Gibb with What Do You Do? And today's guest is Doug Bowers. And Doug, what do you do?
I'm the Chief Content Officer of Dogalogic.
Okay, let's talk about it's fascinating, absolutely fascinating, your company. So let's talk about how you got into it. Let's go back 8 years, and you were,
It started about 8 years ago. I was a CPA, and I'm still a CPA.
Right.
And people would come to you, especially new people would come to you and with their books and records and ask you how they did. And you felt bad that you couldn't help them do better. So what you tried to do, in order to help them do better, you try and move them upstream and try and get them to focus during the current year on the activities that are going to produce the results you need. And that would work for a while, and then sooner or later, especially in large organizations, that starts to break down because you haven't solved the big problem in the room. And the big problem in the room is the people problem.
Okay.
And so what we tried to do is come up with a methodology for solving the people problem and empowering people to do the best they can do and bring their skills and abilities to the table.
And most companies are putting Band-Aids because they think it's a systems problem, right? Not a people problem. They're going to more systems work.
They think it's a mechanical problem.
Well, that's like, is that a systems problem?
A mechanical problem or an allocation of assets problem. They try and treat people like machines. I mean, that was carryover from Henry Ford's day. People aren't machines, they're people with emotions, and they bring certain skills and abilities, they bring observations to the table, and what you have to do is allow them to do that if you expect that business to be successful.
And that's what you came up with from this observation or seeing that we were working in the past too, because it happened, and now you have to move forward to the present, and they're still not changing anything. Basically, right?
Well, we're in a period of time in which we have to do a radical shift.
Right.
And if we can't make that radical shift, then the problem is that this country is going to become like Europe, and we're going to throw away our heritage, and we're not going to like that. And it's going to be very difficult to change that. So what we have to do is make the shift. Because there's three basic forces that are coming our way that's going to force the shift to happen one way or the other. One of them is the generational shift, that the baby boomers are retiring and the younger people are coming on. Their attitude toward life is far different than the baby boomers. They're not going to live like mom and dad, they're going to live differently.
Right.
And so you adapt to them, otherwise you're going to lose your workforce. You're going to lose the best and the brightest of that workforce. The second thing that's a problem is the technological shift, that technology is getting faster, not slower. And it's going to change virtually every business. Imagine you were a business that made frozen orange juice, a staple product for 100 years. Try and find it in the grocery store now. It's on one shelf in the freezer department, whereas you have cases of juice in bottles. The same thing happens with virtually every product. You're going to change. You're either going to adapt to that technological change, or you're going to have a problem in existing. And the third thing that's a problem is the shift in the world economy, that we're becoming much more of a global village. Many more things are made here, are made elsewhere, and sold here. And so if you don't adapt to that change, then you're going to have another problem in the business. So with those three major macro trends that every business is going to be affected by, the thing is, how do you do something to make it work? How do you empower the people in those businesses to make the business successful? And you don't do it by treating them like machines. You do it treating them like people, and capitalizing on their strengths. And each person has a strength that's unique to them. So what you want to do is pool those strengths in order to be successful.
When you come in, well, go through your story, because I find your background and how you came up with this from an accounting background and shifted around. Go through your story of 8 years ago and how you decided about what we're going to talk about, your Dogalogic. How it came in. How did you birth this? It took you 8 years to birth it.
Well, the problem is that watching people fail in situations in which they had no reason to be failing in, that they had skills and abilities that they could bring to the table, but they were being underutilized. typically in a business, you're faced with a situation where a problem comes up, and either the owner of the business or the management of the business feels that they know the answer and that no one else does. But they're not the ones dealing with the customer. They're not the ones making the product. And so how do you empower the people that are on the front line, the boots on the ground people? How do you empower them? How do you give them the ability to see what the opportunities are and where the solutions are? Because they know the answer. The question is, how do you empower them? And you empower them by getting them to realize what their values are and what they bring to the table, which is why there's seven personalities here, and what those functions are inside a business, and make those two things work together to get to the goal point.
And you started this 8 years ago?
Started 8 years ago with the idea that ought to be the answer, and we set up some parameters. The parameter was that we want an 18-year-old and a 65-year-old to understand it. We want somebody with no education and somebody with a lot of education to understand it. We want it to be neutral in terms of age, gender, education, and experience. So that becomes a fairly hard standard to meet in order to come up with a system that does that. The other profiling systems that are out there, the other assessment systems like DISC and Myers-Briggs, are too difficult to work with one-on-one when you're boots on the ground, when you're in the receiving department, you're a salesman, or you're an accountant. It's too difficult to work with. So what we tried to do was democratize assessments and make it so that anybody can use the information. Anybody can find out about who they are and who everyone else is and then work together.
When you... You checked all the other, I mean, let me talk about it from a marketing point of view. When you decided that you had to get into what you wanted to do, you looked at the Myers-Briggs and the DISC. Did you make comparisons to what you liked about them, or what was good, what wasn't good, and what else you had to do?
Well, the end result, if they're honest tests, are going to be the same because the subject is the same.
Right.
In other words, the person you're trying to describe is still the same, regardless of how you're testing them. So you still have to get to the same answer with the test. The problem is that when you have 100 questions to fill out, people don't want to fill out 100 questions.
No, they get tired.
When I'm filling those tests out, I mean, I get about 20 questions in, and I'm saying, well, what else is there to do with my time? And I don't want to do that. So you have to avoid the negatives of those tests. Not to say those tests aren't valid, but you have to avoid the negative aspects of the testing and find a different approach that people are going to work with. This particular approach is so quick and so fast, and you don't see the answer coming until you've already produced your answer. And that's what makes it valuable.
Okay, so I want to get into that, but I want you to talk about the process of the 8 years, because that's a long time.
Well, when I first came up with the idea, it was originally designed to be colors and functions in a business, and there are certain other resources out there like De Bono's Six Thinking Hats and things of that nature, but those are adjectives as to the way people do things. They're not verbs. They don't empower people to go do something. And so I wanted to move to a system that was empowering for people, that people could actually take action with and had a basis to take that action. And we originally started off with just simply colors. But colors aren't really descriptive. They don't give you the warm and fuzzy. They don't give you a way to hang on to something. I'm a blue person. What does that mean? I mean, that doesn't describe anything to anybody. So then we eventually came to dogs, and all the dogs have names. And the breed of the dog isn't as significant as what the image is saying. And so it gives you a way to hang on to that information and use that information.
And why dogs? Why did you pick cats?
Dogs are universally more friendly.
Okay.
And they get around the obstacles. The obstacles are, I don't like colors or I'm colorblind. I don't like instruments, or I don't understand what an instrument does. I don't want to be a fish. I don't want to be a bird. I just want to be something I'm comfortable with. Because it's not really about the dogs. It's really about the psychology behind it. So you have to get around those obstacles in order for people to be able to want to jump into it.
And how long did that take you? Because people are doing products, too, and we have business people watching this. And you know,
Well, when it first came out, I mean, I thought about the problem for a couple of years and trying to come up with a solution. And then one day, the solution just sort of appeared. I mean, just almost in an instant, almost at whole cloth at that point. And then it was a matter of working out the details. But then, given my personality and giving my focus on measurement and reality and, you know, it's got to be provable and, you know, those kinds of obstacles, we get to the point where you say, well, okay, that can't work. That's too simple. That's too, it's not difficult enough. You're not asking enough questions. I mean, this won't work. So it went through a period of self-doubt about the fact that it would work at all. And then I started giving the test orally to people. And I got amazed every time it worked. And then I kept doing it and doing it. And I got up to about 200 people, and it got so few answers that didn't agree and that people were excited about it. And I said, well, maybe we should carry it further. And then we went on to internet testing where we had 300 or 400 people looking at it, and they're all agreeing with it. And you get so much information at that point of agreement that you have to step back and say, well, maybe the thing does work.
And it's simple.
And it's simple, and it's easy to understand. Yesterday we were down at Irvine Spectrum, and we were testing a guy and his wife, and the wife happened to be a Rhodes Scholar. And he happened to bring his kids with him, so we asked the kids to test. And the kids were picking out who they were, and then they were picking out who their parents were. And then we came back 20 minutes later and asked them to pick again. And you think, well, a 1.5-year-old and a 3-year-old kid would do something different, and they picked exactly the same. So it's provable.
I mean,
so it's triggering.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But it's provable. I mean, mm-hmm. If they keep coming back to the same thing. You know,
right.
Same.
What was interesting is that the dogs the kids picked were the same ones that the parents picked for themselves.
Interesting. So do you want to talk about, because you just went up online how long ago?
On the website? Up in January.
January of mm-hmm. 2000, this year.
This year, right.
Okay. So do you want to talk briefly about the whole concept and the picking? Because
what we have here is 7 functional areas, and we have 7 attributes of people. And they're all emotionally based, because I think people are basically emotional in the way they do things, the way they make decisions. They use logic to justify those emotions, but I mean, why does a red truck go faster than a white truck? It's nothing to do with the truck. It has all to do with emotional, how you feel about it.
You know, this is very interesting. With you coming up with an account, coming from an accounting background, where mm-hmm. it's, you know, the numbers, and numbers are really black and white, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Pretty much. Mm-hmm. So you had black and white numbers, and then you moved into a field.
Well,
that is, you're really working with, I mean, we're still doing numbers with what the way people, with the statistics of this.
The reason it works is because I'm very observational oriented. I look at people, I watch people, I watch the way they do things. If I'm going to deal with a business from an accounting standpoint, I don't want you just to send me the numbers. I want to talk to you. I want to go out to that business. I want to feel the business. I want to hear the business. I want to see what it smells like. I want to have a sense of that business, because that tells me information I can't get just from the numbers. I look for the numbers to confirm the sense. So since I was very observationally oriented, and you start dealing with people and you say, who's effective doing a certain task? And you start to get a feel for who that person is and how that person comes at things emotionally. So it's still driving to what the reality of the situation is. It's not trying to make a situation up. I'm not trying to put people in round pegs in square holes type of thing. I'm trying to say, go with who they really are. So the descriptions became based on those people.
Like when you went to, let's say you went to a business that was kind of failing, mm-hmm. but you knew the owner really had the potential, but he maybe didn't have enough help. He was trying to do it all himself. Did that play into it?
It plays into it because you have to have all 7.
Okay.
You can take a couple of them and you can hire them in. You can bring them in on a part-time basis. Obviously, you can bring an accountant in. You can bring a lawyer in. But certain other ones, you really have to have resonant in the program in order to make the business work. And you have to have all 7, because the problem is that when you work on a problem or an opportunity, it takes all 7 perspectives in order to get a rounded view as to what the problem is and what the solution is. Even in our organization, and as skilled as we are, when I come to the table with a situation or a problem or an opportunity, after everyone else has had a whack at it, it's a far better opportunity than what I thought it was. And oftentimes they want to go in different directions, they ask different questions, they come at it from different perspectives. And that's really important toward getting the better answer. Now, if your goal is my way or the highway, then you're throwing all that asset away, all that potential away. If your goal is how can I get the best result, then this is the way you want to do it, because this brings out the best result. It empowers people to be who they are and bring their skill sets forward.
Where you're coming from and to in an organization, is that you're really changing. You're almost like a change catalyst within to bring the change that they need to succeed. I mean, if they're tottering there.
Well, in a business that's failing, they basically want to keep doing the same thing they've always done, but they're only going to get the result they've always gotten. So that's really not going to be effective. They really have to make some substantial changes if they're failing.
Right, and that's a big change element.
Right.
And people don't, lots of times, want to change, even though if they know they're failing.
Well, they stay with what's comfortable,
right,
but they continue to fail. So if your goal is to be successful, then you have to make a change. You have to change the way you're doing things. So we're really all about changing the way business does business. And the reason is because most businesses are not successful, or they're not as successful as they could be. If you think of businesses as fitting within a bell curve where you have four quadrants.
Right.
The left quadrant we call the businesses that are going out. I mean, they're businesses that are waiting for the mail to come. And if a check comes in, they get to live another day. If a bill comes in, they're out of business. And you found GM and you found a lot of business over in that category. It didn't matter how much assets they had. The ones in the middle, the two quadrants in the middle, left or right of the center line, they oftentimes lose a little money, they make a little money, but they're really not capitalizing on their potential.
So it's like the status quo.
Yeah. All those businesses, those three quadrants, are all going out of business. Question is when. Not question if, the question is when. It's only the ones on the right quadrant that are actually being successful, that have a future ahead of them. And the thing about the United States, the thing about America, has always been true, is that any business can get into that quadrant. You just have to get there. They'll welcome you in that quadrant, but they're not going to pull you in. You have to go get there yourself. So how are you going to get there? How are you going to change the way you do business?
I mean, that's a major shift. I mean, to take a whole company and do this shift. I mean, do you stay with them as they're going through all these shift changes?
You pretty much have to. Change analysis or change efforts are very hard to do.
Oh, yeah.
They're very emotional efforts, because you have to throw away so much of what you've done in the past, because, first of all, it's not working. Otherwise, you wouldn't be calling me in the first place.
And well, you've got a whole belief system that you have to throw away. Right. So you've got to get those beliefs together and dispose of them somehow and then move
forward. Well, you have to look at them, and the ones that aren't of value, you have to kind of put away, and the ones that are of value, you want to amplify. And the way to do it is to empower the people in the business. See, the thing about every business is the people that are already there, those costs are already done. I mean, you're already paying the wages, you're already paying the benefits, and if you have pensions, you're already paying the pensions. Those costs are already sunk. What you want to try and do is turn them on and leverage those costs that are already there. It's not costing you anything to do it. I mean, why throw those assets away?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
we already have that experiment going on someplace else in the world, where we're taking the women in a culture and saying, well, you can't function. You can't contribute. So we're only going to have certain people contribute. It's not working. It's not going to work. Why would you go into a business and say, well, you four people, you don't get to contribute, just do what you're told? I mean, why would you do that? When they've got plenty of ideas, they've got experience, they've got the contact with the customer, they can bring all that power to it. Why don't you open the table up and let them participate?
And when you're going around, you're doing the coaching on this part of it, right? And when you come in,
well, you're helping people do it, because typically in a situation it's been where we don't care what you think, we don't want to hear what you have to say, we don't want to have any input from you, just do what you're supposed to do. There's a story about a guy who ran an aquarium shop, and he wanted to give gifts out to people who bought the entire package of the aquarium. You know, bought the aquarium, the rocks, and the gravel, and the whole shot, and the fish. So if they were doing that, we want to give them some kind of gift. The question is, what do we want to give them? So we had this kid who was basically long hair, tattoos, wearing a skateboard, coming forth and saying, well, why don't we give him a box of candy made out in fish? Thanks. Made out like fish, right? So you can go to a local candy store, and they can make those fish. It's not expensive. And you can start handing out a box of chocolates with, you know, in the shape of goldfish with the aquarium. And what he found is that people came back to him later and says, I would like to buy the candy. No, we're not a candy store, we're a fish store. Well, I'm going to a birthday party, and my kid's going to a birthday party, and we want to give the candy. Now, here you had a lower level person coming up with a great idea. Why would you not turn those ideas on? Didn't cost you anything. Why would you not empower those people to step up? You're hurting them if you don't. You're hurting your business even more. There's no point in it. There's no future in that. That's the problem we have in our economy and in our country, where we have so many people who are compartmentalized off on the side and not allowed to participate, not allowed to be who they are. Why would you do that? Why don't you turn them on? And what this system is designed to turn them on.
Did they eventually make the chocolate fish?
Eventually started selling fish. I mean, you're selling the chocolate fish. Why not? You're making money, aren't you? And it's bringing people in the store. It's doing everything you wanted to do.
Exactly.
Why would you not keep doing that?
Well, I have no idea.
There's no reason not to do that. But if you go at your business saying, we're an aquarium shop, we don't sell chocolate. Okay. See, then you've limited your future. Whereas you find a way to bring people in the store, a fun way to bring them in the store, who knows what can happen from there?
And so you're dealing with possibilities, too. I mean, because you don't know what's going to happen. That came from an idea from a kid, mm-hmm. And here people are happy with their aquariums and their box of chocolate fish, mm-hmm. And then it blooms into another profit center or whatever, but it's still in the fish store, and it's still related to fish, really.
It's still an aquarium shop.
It's still an aquarium mm-hmm. shop that just happens to have this fish.
Some novelty candies in the shape of goldfish.
Right.
But
right.
It brings people into the store.
Right.
And what do you want to do? Bring people into the store. So, you know, why would you turn that idea away? There's no point in it. But yet, if you have a rigid management structure that says we're an aquarium store,
so that means
then you've limited yourself. And if your aquarium store is making obscene amounts of money, okay, but what if it's not? And it probably isn't, because most businesses are very marginal. So why be marginal? I mean, the customer doesn't want you to be marginal.
No.
The customer actually wants you to make money, because the enlightened customer says, if you don't make money, you aren't going to be here tomorrow to serve my need. And I want you to be here tomorrow, so I want you to make money. And if you want the employee to be the same way, why don't you reward them for what goes on? Why don't you cut them in on the action? And ask them to do things to make that action happen. In fact, why don't you even step back and ask them what the action should be? I mean, what should we do to get where we need to go?
Yeah,
why don't you do that?
Yeah.
Because they probably know. Because they're the ones talking to the customer. When the customer comes forth with an idea that says, we ought to do this, why don't you listen? Because the customer probably has an application that's outside of your industry, it's outside of your way of thinking about your product, it's oftentimes better. So we have examples of exactly that. We have Ross Perot, for example, who was a star salesman for IBM. And he met his quota in January of a year, and he went to IBM and he says, you know, the people buying all this hardware from us, millions of dollars of hardware, they don't know how to operate this stuff. Why don't we go in there and operate it for them and charge them for it? And IBM says, no, we don't do that. We don't do that. And he said, well, do you mind if I do it? No, go knock yourself out. So then he became Electronic Data Systems billions of dollars later.
And what did IBM do?
IBM continued to make the hardware and then eventually is not making hardware too much anymore.
Right, right.
But we have example after example of that. I mean, we have the example of Bill Gates trying to sell them DOS. No, no, we're IBM, we do this and we do this great thing. But I've got this program. No, no, we're IBM.
DEC did it too.
And then they became Microsoft.
Yes, and well, DEC did the same thing. They weren't happy with the PC. They didn't want to go there because they were digital equipment.
Right.
And so they could have competed with IBM.
They could own the business.
Yeah, they could have. That was in the early the 82. We're going to stop for a moment. We're going to take a couple minute break. Come on back, and we're going to discuss Dogalogic with Doug. Hi, this is Marilyn Gibb with What Do You Do? And we have Doug Bowers as our guest in the second half of this show. So Doug, continue from where we left off last week.
Okay,
we're going to start talking about the dogs now.
Yeah, I think what you'd like to do is talk about the application of things and how things lay out. There's basically seven personality types, and they also mesh with the seven functions inside a business. And since I want people to go to the website and take the test, and the test is free, I don't want to take away from them the aha moment that they would get by taking the test. So we'll talk about the dogs, but we're not going to talk about them in order, and we're not going to point to them so that we don't hurt the people's opportunity to take the test. We have somebody here who's into feeling things first. In other words, as a person who can sense what's going on in a business, can sense when somebody's having a problem, can make things right if something's gone bad, you've lost a big customer, you've done something of that nature, can make it work. You could be on a SWAT team, a police SWAT team, where you can make it a livable place to be, because things oftentimes don't go well for those guys, and somebody has to help them regroup so they can go redline again, because they can't stay at redline. So we have somebody who's able to do that function. We have a team leader who's able to get everybody to coordinate together, can understand when one person says something, what another person says, can translate between the two. Because some of these guys can't really talk to each other, especially if they're purists. They can't really talk. The manufacturing has a difficulty talking to the scientists, for example.
But back up. Okay, so when you have somebody who's a translator, they have to move from sometimes the technical language into the everyday language.
They have to understand what everyone else is saying.
Right.
And what everyone else means by what they're saying. It's not, because it's not always the words, it's oftentimes the emotion behind the words.
Okay, give me an example.
That matters.
So we all understand what you're talking about here.
Well, a production type person might come from a perspective says that you can't do that, that won't work that way. And he's harsh and he's difficult about it. What he really means is, you know, the way you've conceived of doing it isn't going to work, but you know what would work? If we could do it this way, that would work. Would that be okay with you?
Right.
Okay. But the production guy oftentimes will not say it that way. He'll say it the harsher way. And someone else who comes up with an idea for something that's creative, is new, and doesn't necessarily know how to get it done will be turned off by that expression. So we need somebody in the way to translate between those two, saying, you know what he really meant was that the way you conceived of it won't work, but he had an idea for how it will work. And so we have to hear the way it will work.
This takes a lot of learning new languaging, new modeling, right? I mean, there's a lot of language changes in some ways to kind of teach them how to be a little more polite and sensitive, and then modeling exactly what you're
Right, the ability to translate language between different characters is a different skill set than what the others have.
Right.
And so that's why one of them That's the primary skill set. What can I do to help you? How can I get things out of the way? Do you need financing? Do you need me to go talk to a difficult customer? What do you need to help you do your job better? So there's one person here who does that and is responsible for doing that. And that's a special skill set. And it takes a special viewpoint and background in order to function that way. We have one who's focused on production, getting things
You're
done.
You're talking about our set.
Talking about any organization.
Okay.
Any organization.
Okay.
Because my feeling is that an organization is an organization. And whether it's a business or a charity or a Little League team or whatever it is, really doesn't matter. It's the same because wherever people go, they take their peopleness with them. And so they walk in with their peopleness. And this is all focused on the people function, the way people are, not the way we necessarily like them to be. It's the recognition of this is the way they are, and from this we start. And then we start working on it from there. But we don't start by asking people to be somebody they're not. Because if you think about it, you've been trying your whole life to be who you are. Why don't we just work with that? Because why try and make you something else that you're not?
Because we've been taught to be something. We put up all these barriers and everything else because this is what we're taught.
Or influenced by other people.
Condition.
Sometimes we're influenced by parents that says, you need to be a doctor. Well, I don't like doctoring.
Doesn't make any difference.
No, it doesn't. So we put people in directions which it's not the direction for them. What we need them to do is be who they are. That's where the gold is in being who they are, not being somebody else, being who you are. So all I ask is you come to the table being who you are. And the second thing I ask you to do is to be the best you can be. In other words, bring your A game to the table. I don't care how much you know. I don't care how much experience you have. Just bring your A game to the table. Bring all your emotional energy and enthusiasm to the table, and we'll work with it from there because that's plenty good enough.
So we're starting at where you are.
Where you are,
right.
Where you are as a person.
Okay.
We have another person here who is reality focused. Very much black and white, this is where we are. If you don't like it, that's too bad, but this is where we are. And knowing where you are and how much progress you're making is the key to figuring out how to get somewhere else. Because you have to know where you are to start with. And you have to know whether you're making progress or not. And we have a person here with an institutional memory. We have a person who can measure things and tell you where you are. Really important to have that. A lot of businesses don't have that.
What's an institutional memory?
What we've tried in the past and what's worked. The various combinations of events that we've used, the various kinds of products, the various kinds of customers we've had, as a memory of what we've done before and how that's worked.
Okay, so if you've got a niche, let me just clarify this. If you've got a niche market of, let's say, entrepreneurs, then that is your memory? Because you know how they think.
It's partly that. It's partly understanding the entrepreneurial setup because it's much different than the person who's not.
Okay.
A person who is building a business is a much different animal than a person who's maintaining a business.
Okay, so we're on the maintaining end.
Right.
Let's talk about the maintaining end. So you're pulling all these types together and to be in a business that's been around.
Well, the institutional memory says, how have we related to them in the past?
Okay.
What have they bought in the past? What have they liked? And it's picking up all the little clues and the nuances of that customer relationship. And it's understanding that and categorizing it and recording it and being able to then report that, we tried this before and this was the outcome. Maybe if we did it slightly differently, we'd get a different outcome.
Okay.
Okay. It's the ability to report back what's been done that's the institutional memory aspect.
Okay.
So that's really important, having that.
Oh, yeah.
Typically an accountant type mentality, strategic planning, someone who measures things, somebody who's into where are we, use a certain language like that. Very important language to have. The language that the people use gives away which one they are. At least it does to us.
Okay.
We can ask you to give yourself away by taking the test and picking a dog, but if you listen to the follow-on language, that either confirms or denies that you've picked correctly. Most people pick correctly. We have another person here.
Wait. Back up. What happens if you feel that they've picked incorrectly, but they feel that they've picked correctly?
It's a matter of asking them some questions. Well, the people, when they pick for themselves, are going to be far more accurate than I am.
Okay.
All right. If I'm 80% accurate, they're going to be nearly 100% accurate. So I don't like to pick for them. I like for them to pick for themselves.
Okay.
But it's amazing when you have a group setting and people start picking the dog they are, and then they find out what all the dogs mean, that everybody else in the group can confirm that you've picked correctly or you haven't. Because sometimes people will want to own a different dog than who they are, and it takes the group to come back to them and say, no, that's not the way you think, that's not the way you function. Remember what you did last year with this customer? Okay. And pull them back to the reality of it. So looking at the other characters here, we have somebody who's capable of selling a concept or an idea, taking it outside, typically in sales, but also can be a minister who takes an idea and gets other people to subscribe to it or explains it to other people. We have another person here who is able to produce things, is a fix-it person, can solve problems, can figure out the answers to problems, doesn't view a problem as a problem, but views it as something to be fixed, and has the resources and the capability and self-confidence to do that.
Okay.
It's really important. We have another person here who looks at the big picture and say, well, you know, we ought to go here, we ought to go there, that ought to be something we ought to do. And you ask that person, well, how do you do that? Well, I don't know how to do that.
I just
know we should go there.
Right.
Luckily, we have someone else who knows how to get there, but doesn't necessarily know where we should go. And so it's the combination of all these characters that matter. That's where the gold is. And we have another person here who thinks about what could go wrong. I mean, with this product, you know, there's risks here, or we don't have financing, or you know, we have an EPA problem, or whatever the problems are, they will come up with a list of problems longer than you want to look at. But if you're going to take a product to market, it's nice to know that ahead of time, because the customer will find it and trash your product and trash your company. So why not find it out ahead of time? Luckily, we have someone who's a specialist in that, a risk control person. And when that person comes up with that list, you take advantage of that list because there's somebody else who can fix those problems. It's the combination of everyone is where the gold is. If you come to, my experience is that if someone comes to a table and comes up with an idea that on its surface is basically stupid, you know, it's yeah. basically not a good idea.
Right. You've heard it, right?
I've heard it before. And they come to a table with an idea that's just a bad idea. Or it's an immature idea, it's an undeveloped idea. That doesn't bother me in the slightest, because I know what comes next. What comes next is somebody will say, well, that won't work, but I'll tell you what will work. And I know when that language comes out that that's where the gold is. This is what will work, though. So the genesis of the idea, the genesis of the program, might have been a bad idea to start with, but it doesn't stay bad because we have 7 people working on it. And that's where the gold is.
And that's where you have to get people to really listen and not put each other down. So, because if they put each other down, that's going to squish it. You know, the person who is the change manager, whoever, has to take the idea, and it may be a stupid idea, like you said, but you can't say it's a stupid idea. Not much in corporate America, but they would say, well, that's a stupid idea. Then the person gets shut down, and there may be somebody there who doesn't say, but I can tell you how to change it.
Right. Well, some of the ideas are good and some of the ideas are bad, depending upon, right. you know, the idea. And all of us have good ideas and bad ideas.
Do you do brainstorming, too? I mean, can you do brainstorming when you do that kind of stuff?
Yeah, you want to be wide open.
Okay.
I mean, you don't want to be limiting ideas. I mean, you limit ideas, that's a second step or a third step, but the first step is getting ideas out on the table. People bring different skill sets to the table, and what you want to do is allow them to bring those skill sets, so you don't want to shut them down. And what happens in corporate America typically is we shut them down. We say, you can't do that, don't do that, do what I tell you to do. And you're deleveraging the people when you do that.
Exactly.
I don't care whether you're a huge business or a small business. You got the same problem because it's still a people problem. It's not a numbers problem. It's a people problem. Yeah, if it was a numbers problem, I could solve that pretty quickly because I know numbers. But it's typically not a numbers problem. It's a people problem.
Yeah.
Almost always.
It's a feeling problem.
Feelings are part of it. Vision is part of it. Knowing how to get it done is part of it. Knowing how to get it sold outside the organization is part of it. Knowing the reality where we are is part of it. I mean, these are all parts of the problem. And you got to get them all open and be open. What you can sometimes do if you're sitting around the table working on it, somebody has advocates a position, and you have to sit back and say, well, that's coming from Stan, or that's coming from that position. I understand that that's the way that person thinks. So that's coming from that position. That's one use of it. Another use of it is to say that, well, we haven't heard from Scotty. We haven't heard from this person. Would this person please come forward with, how would this person think about it? How would this dog think about a subject? And you start going around the table saying, well, what's the impact from what we've been talking about? How would this person think now? And you might go around the table 2 or 3 times and getting all that richness of input. And it's a matter of being able to pull it out. It's really not hard. It's very intuitive.
But you have to have an environment that is very open.
You have to have an environment in which
it's very open and honest.
It has to be honest, but it also has to say that you're not going to get penalized because you come up with an idea that might not work.
Yeah, and exactly.
Because the clients I have that are very successful don't penalize people for coming up with ideas. They don't even necessarily penalize people for coming up with an idea and trying the idea and finding out it doesn't work.
But they come back with maybe what will work after they've blunder through things you don't know.
It's a series of mistakes.
Yeah.
Basically to get to the right answer. But if you don't allow mistakes, then you can't get to the right answer. Unless you just happen to dream it up out of the sky, and reality is that doesn't happen.
Exactly, but it's allowing the mistakes.
Allowing the mistakes to happen.
And saying we're okay with the mistakes happening.
Right.
That's very important.
Very important. It's a people dynamic. This is all people-centric. It's a people dynamic. It's the way people think. It's the way they act. It's the way they feel. And if you don't play off that, if you don't empower that, then you're just throwing so many assets away. And you're asking them to be production lathes. And they're not lathes. They're people.
Right.
And the boots on the ground people are the ones that go out and talk to the customer. They see what the customer does. They see the application of the product for the customer. I mean, a lot of the innovation that happens in a particular industry comes from outside the industry. I mean, when Southwest started, and they wanted to figure out how to turn planes around quickly. They didn't go to other airlines to figure out how to turn planes around because they knew they weren't doing it. So they went to race car people and say, how do you turn a race car around 30 seconds?
Well, that's thinking outside the box because you keep...
Well, it's taking ideas from outside the industry.
Right. That, yeah.
And being open to them and then working on them in a structured way, and this is a structured way, to bring out the best of those ideas and refine those ideas. I mean, the first time you come up with an idea, it's unlikely that it's a great idea.
That's true.
But if you refine it and work on it after time, you can come up with a great idea.
So what happened with Southwest? They went to the
They went race? To the car race guys, the pit crews, and they got the answer there.
Did they work in a collaboration with the race car?
They went
people?
And studied them and took their information and came back and said, okay, well, that's how you turn a race car around. How do you turn an airliner around? And they did the same processes. They didn't follow the industry. They followed somebody else who was successful. So if you're willing to be open to other ideas, then you're able to find the answers to problems. If you say, no, we don't do it that way, then it's a problem. The old line thing that after World War II, where you had railroads that were being asked the question, what business are you in? They said, we're in the railroad business. Fatal mistake. If they had said we're in the transportation business, then they could have owned the airlines too. But they chose not to because they limited their viewpoint to being just in railroads. Because they could have owned railroads and could have owned trucking. They could have owned airlines at the same time.
Well, sometimes when, I'm a pretty eclectic reader, but when, you know, you're reading something and it's so different from your industry, but a little idea will spark there that you can move into what you're doing.
Right, you take that example over there and you see what somebody else did and you say, well, you know, that won't work in our industry, but what will work is this. Again, that's the gold answer. And that's when the gold starts coming out. And then when you get all these people working on it from all these different perspectives, you have that richness of thought that you can't get if you're the owner of the business.
When you come in and you start working with people, with, you know, groups of people, these seven people, some of them may, do you have to move people around? Like, if they're not...
Well, what you want to do is try and get everybody in the right place.
Right, so if they look at the dogs and they pick something completely different and then you talk to them...
I have no problem with that.
Then will you talk to, like, the owner and say maybe you should move him to a different... area?
Well, what you're going to experience that if you're talking to the rank and file people, the people who actually get the work done in the business, they're going to look at this and they're going to say, yeah, this is obvious. Why aren't we doing this? If you talk to people under 40, they're saying, of course this is the way it is. Isn't this obvious? Okay. I know it's obvious, but they see it right away. The problem you have sometimes is upper-level management has been doing things a certain way and is comfortable doing it that way and feels challenged by this open atmosphere. And then you have to have a little private conversation with them and tell them, you know, look how much profit you're letting go. Look how unsuccessful this business is when it could be so much more successful and you could still be the leader anyway. I mean, why not change the way you're doing it? And you have a little different reality meeting. That's where the accountant comes in with the reality that, you know, the business is doing this and its valuation is such, and if you were doing it different, the valuation could be three times as much. Now, what do you want to do? I mean, I had a client once who, where the business had been doing about the same amount of sales for years. And I came into him and I said, well, why don't you make these changes and you'll do better? And the client said, well, I don't know if I should do that. I said, okay, well, let's put some skin in the game. Why don't you go home tonight and tell your wife you want to put the kids to bed early, put the kids to bed, and sit down and said, honey, you know, if we made these changes, the accountant said you wouldn't have to work anymore, but I'm not sure they'll work, so you can keep working. Go ahead. See how that works for you. And that's the situation that businesses are in who refuse to make a change, who refuse to look at doing it differently.
But they're not going to survive.
They eventually will fail.
I mean, from the marketing, what I've studied, you've got the different cycles in marketing, so they either have to, it's going to die, or they got to come up with a different product. Woollite now has a product for dark clothes.
Well, they're going to deal with those three trends,
right,
that we talked about before, or they're going to die. The question is when, not the question is if. One exercise you can do, if you don't think that matters, you can do that I've done with college kids. You take a piece of paper and you draw a line down the middle. And you say a working career, let's say, is 30 years. So from now, you go back to 1980, and on the left column, you make a list of all the things that existed then that did not exist now. And on the right-hand side, you make a list of all the things that exist now that didn't exist then. You will be amazed at what's on that list. Cell phones, Microsoft, digital. Okay. The world has changed dramatically. And it's going to change a lot faster and a lot more, but you have to be willing to look at it.
What is gone? I mean, because I remember there was a game show about whiteout. Remember the
whiteout's game? Largely irrelevant.
Yeah.
Typewriters. I mean, I haven't had a typewriter in years.
Right. Right. I've seen some companies, they still have typewriters.
Princess phones. Well, to type a form, that once in a blue moon form.
Right.
Princess phones. Now you have, well, you, before 1980, you really didn't have PCs.
No, you didn't have
you
PCs.
You didn't have Apple. You didn't have iPhone. You didn't have cell phones. You didn't have Microsoft. You didn't have PCs.
In technology, it was big. Now, what about like food companies or restaurants?
Well, you had frozen orange juice before.
Right. Yeah.
And
you had the milkman delivering the milk.
Have very little of it now. The milkman went out years ago, but there's lots of other delivery systems. If you had a business in which you put 3/4 of your productive capital making up wax-based cartons to put milk in,
right,
you're out of business. Because we don't use wax-based cartons anymore with little pull tops.
And it's funny because, you know, you don't think about, you don't think about things. I knew they were there. But then all of a sudden they're not there, and it doesn't seem to matter because something else has come along to replace it.
But if your capital investment in your business had been, if that has been your business doing that product, you're out of business.
Right.
So the technology will change. Likewise, the opportunity is that if you come up with a different way of doing it that's far better, you can own that business. You can own that industry. You can be a disruptive technology. You can change the way everything works in that industry. And you can be the leader of it if you can sit and figure it out. If you don't have the idea, these other people do.
Right. So what you're saying, you know, kind of sum up all this, is that you have to have, it's good to have the 7 types of people.
You have to have them all.
You have to have them all.
Mm-hmm.
Get in and to me, you're probably reevaluating every year your products. Right?
Continuously.
Mm-hmm. Is it worth keeping, or is it cheaper to dump it? It's not going anywhere.
Can we serve the customer better if we did it differently?
Right. So it's always, rather than being the status quo, we have these customers, we do this, we do that. It's always about change. How can we make it better?
Continuous improvement, so to speak.
Okay.
If you really are cranking on it, what you'll do is you'll not only have your employees around the table, you'll also invite your vendors, and you'll invite your customers. You'll be gutsy enough to invite your customers to the table and saying, how could we do a better job for you? They'll be thrilled to offer their suggestions, and their suggestions will largely be outstanding suggestions. That's been my experience.
We're going to wrap up. Tell people to go take the test.
I'm Doug Bowers, and I'm the Chief Content Officer for Dogalogic. What I would ask you to do is to go to the website, www.dogalogic.com, and take the test, find out which dog you are, and then you can get a free report as to your values, what you can do, what your skill sets are, and how best you do for other people.
Thank you, Doug. Thanks a lot for coming.
Thank you, Marlene.
This is Marlene Gibb with What Do You Do?
This program was brought to you by P. Murphy & Associates, successfully providing IT professionals to Southern California businesses.